Good evening. You're listening to the Folk School Radio Hour on WDRT 91.9. I'm Julie Tamaro, and I am sitting down today with Janelle Keesaw and Julia Buckingham. And you are both integral parts of the Kickapoo Valley Forest School.
Yes, thanks for having us today. I really enjoy your show, and pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
Yeah, great. I'd love it if we could just start with a little, just sort of, who are you? How did you get involved in education in general? And kind of, yeah, Julia, why don't we start with you?
Okay, I was going to say, Janelle, do you want to start? But I'll take it. I have been fortunate to come up to the Driftless region with my family at a very young age. And so fell in love with this space right outside Lafarge and knew that I wanted to grow up more here when I was an adult, and so I moved here in my early 20s, and I've been working in sections of different educational environments since then, working with Janelle at the Kickapoo Valley Reserve and the Education Department, and working at other public schools, Montessori schools. And then when I heard that that Janelle Keesaw and Megan Gustafson from the Lafarge School District were interested in starting the Forest School, I jumped onto that steering committee as fast as I could because it was something that was really, really important for me. And I think we'll get more into that in a little bit, but I've just always been in education, and I've always have had some stream of environmental education in my teaching, both formal and informal. And so to merge the two is just a dream. So that's how I got started.
Nice.
Forest School.
Definitely. I'm just kind of reflecting, Julia. I think we've been working together on and off for probably at least 20 years.
Wow.
I was just remembering like when I first met you and you started teaching at the Kickapoo Valley Reserve, and Julia actually did some citizen science there for me, did some snake surveys. That was super cool.
Oh. The old school GPS.
Yeah.
They had to like plug in.
Totally. So my background is a little bit different. I grew up here in the Driftless. Well, I moved here when I was 5, and I went to school at Lafarge for grade school and high school. My parents lived right outside of town, so I grew up adjacent to the Kickapoo Valley Reserve and spent tons of time riding my horses and biking and playing in the river. And then I went to school at UW-Madison, and I got a degree in conservation biology. And was really interested in scientific research, but also in environmental education. So for several years, I did work as for the Fish and Wildlife Service as a bird researcher in Alaska and in Baja, Mexico. But after a while, I realized that what I really wanted to do was settle in somewhere and work as an environmental educator. So I kind of got my experience doing that at environmental education centers in northern Minnesota. I worked for about 5 years at different environmental education centers. And then I met my to-be husband there, and we moved back to the Driftless. And I basically begged the Kickapoo Valley Reserve to let me start an education program there, which I did and got to hang out with some really amazing people, Julia being one of them, for about 20 years until we got the school off the ground.
Nice, nice. So you're really rooted in that space and in the wild places in kind of the, I guess, that section of the Kickapoo River there.
Definitely. Yeah, I think it's fun. Julia, you know, really brings a background of education, and I really bring a background of scientific inquiry and environmental education, and also like just connection to that local community having graduated from high school there.
Yeah, yeah. And that's probably really important with like the Forest School being kind of rooted in that place.
Absolutely.
Nice. That's a really beautiful thing. So some people listening probably have heard of the Kickapoo Valley Forest School, may know that it's kind of a newer school and is over in the Lafarge School District, but might not really have a full kind of concept of like forest schooling as a model of education. It's not new, but it's sort of new to us, and it's kind of growing, it's increasing. So do you have like a good way of just describing like what forest school looks like? I'm sure it's different in different places too, and how that kind of, you know, works for our forest school, and then maybe some other forest schools that might be in a desert. I don't know. Like, what would that be?
Well, we have our pie in the sky ideas of like what we would love forest school to look and be like in this area. And we also have some realities of what we know is maybe best practice, right? Mm-hmm. We could see ideally it'd be great if the children were outside the entire time. But we also know that children get a little maybe cold and need a inside snack or to wash their hands with warm water. And so
yeah.
I feel over the years we've really found this balance between allowing our children to be outside for long extended times and in these beautiful wild places, coupled with that opportunity to have these safe, cozy indoor places to practice their writing or to warm up after being wet and cold in this from the slushy mm-hmm. snow.
Yeah.
And so when we look at our idea of what forest school is in the Southwest Wisconsin, I think we can maybe paint a picture of what that looks like too, because it is different in different climates and mm-hmm. different places in the world too.
Yeah, and I think that something that we're trying to do that's really new and really different is the forest school model in a public school setting. So, when we started thinking about nature immersion schooling, we did, all of us, study different forest school models in Europe and even in the United States. There's a really great program called the Cedar Song Way that we all studied and, researched. That's a private nature school, as many in the United States are. And many of them are just part of the day.
And they're in the Pacific Northwest.
Mostly in the Pacific. Yeah, a little bit more temperate. And so we still took all those ideas, and we knew that there was something really special and really important about getting kids outdoors for extended periods of time. And like Julia said, I think when we started, we did have some maybe larger than life ideas. And knowing that we wanted to make this education accessible to everyone so that it wasn't private, so that it was free, there was no tuition, tuition-free public schooling, accessible to everybody, also meant that we had to comply with public school rules and regulations as well,
yeah.
which means that kids do have to meet certain benchmarks. And we are finding that we can do that really easily, but also that sometimes some focus time indoors is really helpful, especially for older grades in working on some of those academics. Mm-hmm. So things have, I think, shifted a little bit in that way as we've found our way through the public school model.
And I also think, too, it's that comfort level. We want children to have positive experiences with the natural world.
Right.
We want them to get muddy and dirty and tired and wet and learn that grit and that resilience. But at the same time, too, we don't want to make it a miserable situation for them. So, in late fall when we get tons of rain and the mosquitoes are thick, we mm-hmm. don't want the children to have to suffer getting a million mosquito bites, right? So finding that balance to provide these wonderful outdoor opportunities for the children, coupled with that nurturing inside times for breaks what we've been getting really good at, I feel, too.
I think so, too. And, yeah, on those days when the weather just isn't cooperative, necessarily, it doesn't mean we don't go out. We almost always go out. We might just, like Julia was saying, if the mosquitoes are just thick, then a three-hour excursion might turn into an hour, and then we'll collect things and bring them inside and write mm-hmm. and draw and do things inside so that we do make it accessible for learning.
Yeah you don't want kids trapped indoors in one setting of school, but you don't want them like stuck and left mm-hmm. to like suffer through being outdoors.
Exactly.
And have those positive connections mm-hmm. as opposed to like another form of being stuck in an environment mm-hmm. where they don't have control.
Right.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
So I was going to say, to answer your question would be, Janelle pinpointed it saying that we do go outside every day and our teachers curate these places that the children go to. And so bringing the children to nature so that they can play and engage with that natural world depending on the phenomena that they're learning and seasonal studies or just the beauty that's happening in nature, we provide that opportunity daily for the students mm-hmm. to experience.
Yeah. And we live in such a dynamic environment that, just in the last month, we've had 70s and sun and feet of snow and
mm-hmm. exactly
rumbling yeah. thunder today.
I think we had a 2-week period where the kids went from building snowmen, snow people, to playing in the creek.
And now looking at the spring beauties.
Within just really short days of each other.
Yeah. Welcome to Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So I think you mentioned briefly that forest schooling originally started in Europe. And do you know much about like what drove that or kind of how those started or how that compares to kind of what forest schooling is now?
I don't know a lot about it. I do know that, forest type education has been around in Scandinavian countries for a really long time. In fact, one of our board members is from Scandinavia and attended a forest school as a young child herself.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was, a great influence to have on our team. But I think that, it's always been known that children, that being able to explore, being able to use their bodies, being able to do healthy risk taking has been important for children's development mm-hmm. and growth. And I think that maybe in Scandinavian countries, they just latched onto that sooner than we did here in the United States. And it's sort of just been in the fabric of their culture.
Yeah. That's really great. I've heard, I don't know if this is true or not, but that some of the first forest schools in the United States are kind of Silicon Valley area, and it's like tech-heavy people seeking a more natural environment for schooling, which I think is kind of interesting.
Well, I think that we started to see that too. We started our school, we got our grant in June of 2020.
Timely.
And right after the shutdown basically started. And we opened our doors in the fall of 21. So we had a planning year. And during that time, as you know, people were really thinking about what it means to school not in four walls, just to be safe. Mm-hmm. And people were trying all kinds of models to be outside. And also, I think we as parents were recognizing, we were seeing how much time our children were spending on devices during the pandemic especially. And I think that parents really kind of took a hard look at what can education look like in alternative ways? Like, can my kids learn outside? Can my kids have an education that keeps them away from devices?
Yeah.
And we just happened to be curating and creating a model that did just that. And the timing was really quite perfect, I think.
Yeah.
And there's so much more to education than just math and reading. And,
absolutely.
Right?
And yeah.
That's one of the biggest things that I had the aha moment, being a formal educator, starting to forest school for my very first time, was seeing the development of the children in 4K and kindergarten right before my eyes. I could see the strength. I could see the confidence. I could see the agility just growing in front of me. And I just am baffled at those days. I can still picture the children being able to run down the hill over logs and being amazed at what forest schooling can offer to the children on so many different levels. And we created these different holistic bullet points where we look at the whole child and their development, not just those quote-unquote academics, but we call them multiple literacies and strength and coordination and social interaction and care of self are all part of this learning that happens by the experiences we offer children playing with each other and coupled being with the nature. And so that was one of the biggest shockers of me, switching over to being a forest school teacher.
Yeah, I think that's been really beautiful. That was something that Julia and another one of our founders, Jimena Bunting Engel, really developed the multiple literacies. There are 15, like Julia said, sort of ways to assess a child's growth in a non-traditional way. So looking at the whole child. So how are they developing in their artistic abilities? How are they developing in their ability to communicate with one mm-hmm. another? How are they developing in their ability to resolve conflicts? All the ways that are so important to becoming adults that aren't just measured by math scores and literacy scores.
And
that's been really beautiful to watch develop and really beautiful to watch, I think, the parents be able to see this full view of their child as a whole human and realize, like, even if my child might not be a fast reader or an early reader, my kid climbs trees you know, like no one's business. And my kid can, you know, has the dexterity to weave a willow basket.
My child has the confidence and the ability to talk through conflict at a very, you know, pace of being able to navigate very intensive social interactions, yep. but being able to do that very gracefully and with ease too.
Yeah. And we see kids really being able to find their way like on the landscape and with each other. You know, they recognize, they're so tuned into their surroundings. They recognize certain oak trees over and over again. They know that at that oak tree, you're going to turn to the left and then you're going to get to the little creek. And once you hop over the little creek, I mean, it's amazing. And it's fun when they're able to bring their parents for an event and be able to show them this landscape that they've really learned.
Yeah, I can attest to that as a parent of some forest school kids. Even just taking a hike with them, they are seeing on an innate level things that I've learned on an academic level.
Absolutely.
And I think that's, you know, when that language kind of portals open in young children, they're learning nature as like a language.
Right.
When they are that most sponge-like, which I think is just phenomenal and something I am very envious of.
Yeah, another a really wonderful attribute too is the vocabulary that the children, not even so much like the actual naming of objects, but to describe them with such detail and such, you know, lavish words to describe what they were seeing, I guess is what I said. But yeah, it's really neat to see that growth in that vocabulary too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. That's really great. Where did you first hear about forest schooling? I mean, I guess you were an educator of you know, at the KVR. They had done like a lot of summer programs and stuff. But how did this concept of like, you could do this full time for students, like, was that just an aha moment or when you kind of learned about this schooling model?
Yeah, it wasn't really an aha moment. It was kind of a carefully piloted, can we do this? Let's take some baby steps and pilot it in our community. I think, you know, maybe it was around 2015, 2016, I think Megan Gustafson, who's another one of the five founders of our school, she was the principal at the time at Lafarge Elementary. She's now the superintendent, but she and I, she was also an early educator at the KVR. She worked at the KVR with me before she became involved in the school, so has a great background in environmental education as well. And we kind of cooked up this idea of, like, could we just get the Lafarge kindergarten out here for a day every week? Mm-hmm. And have them, you know, it's so close to the Kickapoo Valley Reserve.
Oh,
we just bus them down the road. What would happen if they spent a day in nature? And of course, you had to have teachers that were on board with that. And we learned a ton from just that small pilot of like, gear is everything. We didn't have, you know, kids were coming without the right gear. You know, there were just so many, you know, that food was so important that if they were going to hike a mile and a half, they were going to be absolutely starving after that.
Yes.
So just that small pilot was super helpful in helping us, you know, learn just really basic, simple things about the program itself that we kind of have, you know, that summer camps weren't really teaching us in this ongoing, because summer is summer, right? And it's warm, it's not cold. You just need sort of certain gear for summer camp.
Right.
So we did this throughout the school year, and then it was a great success. And then we had families in the community that were really asking for like a nature preschool.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was being, just stopped on the street occasionally and saying, when is the KVR going to have some kind of a nature preschool? And so that's when we decided to pilot a tuition-based drop-off program. And that's when Jimena Bunting Engel and Robin Hoseman came to work at the KVR and helped get that program off the ground. We called it Forest Fridays, and it was a drop-off program for a small tuition fee. And the children came without their parents and spent, I think it was 4 or 5 hours on Fridays with us. And we did that, I think, for 2 years and really got to, again, sort of work through a lot of the kinks of food, of gear, of you know, needing shelter, of fire, of safety, of hazards and risks. And then we just built on that momentum and thought and knew that there was this charter school program in Wisconsin that you could apply for a grant. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had seen it done here in Viroqua with the Viroqua Montessori and some other places, you know, around Southwest Wisconsin. And we thought, you know, maybe we can write a grant and get funded to get the school off the ground. And so we put together a steering committee. And that's when Julia, who had lots of amazing charter school experience, came in. We wrote a grant. We thought our school would open with maybe about 60 students. And to tell you the truth, I really didn't think we'd be funded for a tiny little school with 60 students. But we had some really great ideas, I think, that resonated with the Department of Public Instruction. And lo and behold, we were granted $700,000 to get our school off the ground.
Amazing.
Yeah. Do you want to add to that, Julia?
No, that was a really good synopsis.
That's kind of the history. Yeah.
I was fortunate. My sister sent her children to a private for a school in Iowa. And just witnessing them, you know, the aunt from afar, where when they would come to visit, just their ability to pick out and the things and the details in nature and their love for the natural world was very apparent. And I contribute a lot of that to their time with their family and the activities they did, but a lot to their for schooling too. And as an educator, was really attracted to that as a means for schooling.
Mm-hmm. Julia ran the kinder camp at KVR for many, many years. And I remember, you know, she'd have 15 kindergartners out there and would be standing there helping them climb, you know, a log and just, you know, pointing out to me, who doesn't have formal education training, like how important it is for their physical development and, you know, their coordination and their risk assessment. And I just was like, wow, we are really on to something here. Mm-hmm. And that's when, that was back in, you know, before my own children were born. So that was, you know, 2005, maybe. Mm-hmm. Really started to do the research when we saw that.
Yeah. And even my niece came to a couple of those camps.
Yes.
And seeing how she would fall into that imaginative play and how she would be looked very comfortable in the natural world.
Yes.
Was a little bit more intentional in a way. I don't know if that was just like a skewed bias of, you know, being, you know, my niece, but there was something a little bit different, and I don't know, but I'm assuming that it could have been potentially because she had practiced those skills at a forest school, mm-hmm. you know, prior.
Right.
And so that you could feel that she was like comfortable being in nature and comfortable playing, and it was really neat to see.
Yeah. So this kind of like big body play and movement is something that these kids are getting ample amounts of time at, where in maybe a more, you know, traditional school setting, there's 30 minutes of gym or, you know, something very small and controlled, and maybe there's just dodgeball or something. But like, you know, how that compares to climbing trees or, mm-hmm. you know, walking across a downed log or whatever, like that's
I should
such
preface
a difference.
This that our third and fourth grade forest schoolers do love a wonderful game of dodgeball in
sure
the gym.
Yes, that is very.
And I know that's not at all what you were saying, but
no, yeah,
they love it.
They're very, it's very
yes.
age appropriate
yes, yes.
To want to throw something
yes.
at their peers.
The idea that it's daily and it's self-initiated,
mm-hmm.
and the materials are freely there. They're not purposely they're not purposely set up or placed there.
Yeah.
And so they can engage and go into that space or with that tree or with that log in their own time. And so they must have some sort of, you know, draw or attraction to say, I'm going to jump over this, or I'm going to crawl through it, or I'm going to climb up it. And so then it's like self-driven in a way, mm-hmm. too. And so that idea of so many opportunities to engage in, even if it's not a tree, it's I don't know if you get what I'm saying, as far as like it's different than a group game inside.
Well, and
activity
I think
activity wise
yeah, I mean, I'm thinking of an example that I got to watch happen last fall, where, you know, it's almost like there's a role for everyone. So there were some children that were building a bridge over a little gully. And there was one child in particular who was just fascinated by the sort of the engineering of it. And she wanted to get the right stick at the right size, wedged in the right place.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She wanted to test it. And She wasn't, you know, really interested in even walking across the bridge herself. She was just really interested in the building of the bridge. But then there were children who were patiently waiting to test the bridge, you
right,
know?
Yeah.
And there were also children who wanted to just jump the span and didn't need the bridge. And, you know, there was conversation about that. And so it was just really interesting for me to be able to watch. Each child could bring their own needs and their own, you know, developmental place in the world to this project that they started all on their own.
Yeah, their own like self-identified role
yeah.
in like mm-hmm. helping build this greater thing.
Totally.
Yeah. Well, and I've seen a lot of pictures or heard stories from my kiddos about moving very large things as a group, you know, like the and like the communication skills that come into that and like the physical, you know, doing of that. And then like the, okay, we want to move it over here. How do we navigate between these trees or around this or, you know, over that or whatever? Like there's a lot happening there.
Yeah, a lot. And also there's the sort of mental settling, I think, that happens when you do big body work like that. One of our teachers is really sold on the fact that if she walks her children a mile or a mile and a half to the play space, that then they settle into this play that is so rich and so imaginative because they've really kind of walked off any big, you know, maybe... Yeah, big
squirreliness.
Energy, squirrely energy. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, a child who maybe struggles to sit still in school, well, if they go out for a while and carry a whole bunch of heavy logs around and then have a nice protein snack, they're probably going to be much more ready to focus when they come back in.
Mm, yeah, that's a huge difference where that child might in a traditional school been like kind of labeled as a problem or an irritation or... you know, repeatedly kind of reprimanded for not sitting still when maybe they like physically can't
right.
in a way, are given this opportunity to kind of get themselves to a place of where they're capable of, you know, having some stillness or at least finding a place where all of that energy is valued.
Exactly.
Right. And they can feel success in their work and their actions.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that is one of the things I think that I see so often at Forest School is that there's just this confidence in these children because they are all good at something and it doesn't have to be traditional school. You know, mm-hmm. some of them are known for being great climbers. Some of them are known for being able to identify certain plants. You know, some of them are known for being the best at finding
worms
or animal bones, I was going to say. Yeah, exactly.
That's so
and
true.
That's really sweet. Yeah.
Yeah, I really, that's kind of just a beautiful thing. Because in life, you know, we're not all bankers. We're not all, you know, construction people. You know, we all gravitate towards our different roles and our different ways of being in the wider community. So to be given kind of a more level playing field or a more expansive playing field of
right.
like, you know, who are you kind of innately
yes.
in this way that you want to engage with this situation and to not be pressured into like, no, you're not a dodgeball person, but we're doing dodgeball or, mm-hmm. you know, like whatever.
Right.
I'm not going to beat up on dodgeball anymore, but.
We do like it at
yeah.
school too.
Yes, yeah. And I do see people who don't want to engage in
exactly.
Yeah, I totally
yeah.
get what you're saying. Yeah.
I think part of the importance of, you know, building humans that are going to be contributing to society is that, you know, if a child can approach learning with confidence, that's a person who then can go out into the world and find their niche and be able to contribute in a positive way because they came to learning with confidence, I think. And that's something that, again, I see happening every day at Forest School. Like, you don't have to be good at everything. We see you being good at the things you're good at. And,
yeah.
Kids who are confident really can learn.
Yeah, yeah.
And that idea, too, like, maybe they really want to climb that apple tree in the garden, but they try, and day after day, they can't get it. But they see their friends maybe doing it, or they ask their friends for advice, and they, you know, find a log to help them boost up. But then one day, they climb up into that apple tree, and they just have this sense of, like, I did it. I can do hard things.
This oh, my gosh.
Idea of, like, your self-value and self-worth just... reignite that idea of like I can do academics that might be tricky or I can
do hard things
this hard yeah. walk that might be long or and just that innate way that it's coming up in their everyday is really great too.
Yeah, I think it pushes some boundaries. You know, we definitely see kids who come in to forest school, like, you know, that might not be able to tolerate a wet sock in their boot at all. And then, you know, at forest school, you get wet socks in your boots. And, you know, kids by third or fourth grade, for the most part, are like not even mentioning that they have a wet sock in their boot anymore. Like, they've really been able to push their own boundaries of comfort a little bit, which I think that is also an important skill.
Yeah, we kind of live in these little cozy capsules where we go from our climate controlled, you know, here to climate controlled car to climate controlled, you know, public spaces. And so to kind of be a little uncomfortable is there's value in that.
Yeah,
you know,
it translates
that's its own
into
thing.
A lot of skill.
Yeah, that's that, like, that multiple literacy of care of self and like how to take care of yourself when you need something. Yeah.
Now, I've heard you say multiple times that, you know, walking a mile and a half with kids or whatever, I think a lot of people would hear that and think, like, are you pulling teeth to do this? Like, how do you, are you dragging them? Like, that seems like a long way. You know, a lot of people don't walk that much in their daily life. How is that, like, leading a group of kids? Is that like a little parade of
Well, I think the
chaos?
Social, like they're social beings, right? So they want to be by their peers. So I think that helps for sure.
Yeah.
Being able to, you know, walk and talk and walk and see things. Yeah, I think each group is different. And then we like train our teachers to sort of like gauge their overall energy level, right? A Tuesday hike may be more like a lot different than a Friday hike. They might be exhausted.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Depending
that makes
on the
sense.
Day of the week. And so we kind of look at those kind of aspects too. And so I really do think that the goal to play when we get to a spot or the encouragement to like go see the cranes in the field and that social aspect really do help out a lot.
We're also building that stamina as they age up through the grades. So it's very deliberate that, you know, the 4-year-olds and the 5-year-olds start out the year playing in the village park and in the garden just up the hill. It's enough for them to navigate going up the hill. It's enough for them to navigate getting their snowsuits on. But by spring, they're walking further. They're going out to, you know, walk to private landowners. They might walk up to the Organic Valley property that we're allowed to use. And so, you know, they're building that stamina. And so then by the time they're in first grade and second grade, it's our second graders who I was referring to walking that mile and a half.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, we would not ask that of kindergartners.
Yeah, that
not,
would be.
Not that they couldn't do it.
They yeah, really could. Yeah.
So it's, you know, they become ready for it as they move up through forest schooling.
Yeah. And you've also mentioned gear a lot and that. So what kind of gear do the students bring from home? What does the school provide? How does that kind of work? Because, you know, they're a wide range of seasons. Even in a one day, it can vary. How do you ensure that they can go out as comfortable as they can be?
We have recommended gear ideas, and we also sort of looked at what is tricky in our area to find, right? I mean, we have my wild child now that probably provides a lot more options, but
yeah,
you know,
definitely.
When we first started, we didn't have those options, and so we decided that offering we call them our yellow rain suits, and so a jacket and bibs of the really nice rain gear would be really important. And so and it's not something that the children use every day. They might use their bibs more often than their coats. So the school provides a set of a rain gear set. And then also the mittens that have like a fleece lining that are same material. And so that helps for like slushy snow or cold and wet, rainy days in the spring and the fall. And so we provide that, and then a mosquito hat, like a sun hat with a mosquito net, is something that we didn't know would be really easy to get, but it can be very valuable, hence the thick mosquitoes we were talking about earlier. And we provide sleeping bags for our 4K in kindergarten for resting. We provide like a zip-up fleece for like just to have extra layer.
Yeah.
And then we have a loaning library. So parents can ask for either neoprene boots or snow boots that have like a felt lining or woolen lining inside. We really recommend like one suits. I call them onesies, but that's not the term. Just like a like a little winter suit that's all one.
Is one that, piece snowsuit.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a snowmobile suit, yes, but exactly, you know, yes, appropriately sized, yes, for the younger, yes, audience.
It's warm. It's very, you know, it's very warm, and it's actually very easy for them to get on. And so when we're talking about the care of self, and when we're talking about all like the resilience of being able to wear all these layers and scrunchy. And so we've realized over the years that Robin Hoseman was really great and pivotal in saying, like, we need to get more of these one-piece onesies. So we have those alone, but actually over the years, we've been recommending this more and more to families. And so we've been seeing more and more of those coming in throughout the year.
I think as a public school, accessibility is so important to us, and that's part of what we spend our grant dollars on every year. We've mm-hmm. been lucky enough to have a grant now every year that our school's been open, which won't always be the case. But while we do have it, we're accumulating this really great gear library. Lots of people check out gear throughout the year. Kids grow so fast, it's so hard to keep up with,
yes,
boots and snowsuits and things. So we want to always make sure that everybody has what they need and that nobody, doesn't have what they need, because some of this gear can be really expensive as well. Mm-hmm. And so we certainly have more than enough to share. And then parents will do a lot of thrifting, and they do a lot of trading. Sometimes we have a gear swap in the spring. And so there's lots of hand-me-downs happening within the forest school community as well.
And siblings. Some of those outdoor gears are so well-made that they last a couple.
Totally.
Yeah. Brother, sister, it's really great to see the same suit repeat itself.
Yeah.
Nice.
And
nice.
Duct tape goes a very long way.
Yeah.
I make a blanket discussion for our teachers. Like, it is fine to wear duct tape in your outdoor gear, and children can too.
Yep. Julia always makes a point to say, please, like, just throw some duct tape on those rain pants. This is not a school where we're going to even think twice about that.
I can attest to the duct tape, and it comes in fun colors, and you make it all that much more interesting, yes, to limp that gear through the year. Yes, nice. Well, this is just all so fascinating to think about how kids are, spending so much time outside. And I know, Julia, you were talking about your niece who had gone to forest school, and maybe she's a little bit older now. Do you see this kind of like reflected in kind of who she is now as maybe a teenager? I'm not sure when you said that.
She's in eighth grade now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think she's very confident in herself.
Yeah.
Right? She has this very wonderful ability to feel comfortable in making her own decisions and making her own choices, maybe this is an eighth grade thing, and maybe it's her family too, but I really feel that she was given the space to, be herself, which has been really great to see.
Yeah.
And even though she's not playing out in nature all the time, she still has this very comfortable being in nature, right? She can still like attune to it, and she still very much loves animals, and she very much is like wanting to be in the natural world, but even though she's not in it every day like she was at the forest schooler.
Yeah, but yeah.
It would be
she loves it, yes.
Such a fascinating study if there's any graduate students listening to the show to track, the forest schoolers. We have our inaugural group of forest schoolers, our oldest group now are fourth graders. They'll be fifth graders next year, and then they'll go on to middle school somewhere in high school after that. And it will be, it would be such an interesting study to follow some of those kids along. But we certainly see, we've had 5 years now with some of these children, and, just the growth and confidence that we've seen in them is really amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, some of these schools have existed, that are older than this school. So there must be some kids research out there that are ripe for data picking, right, for somebody. So yeah, I would love to know more of them. But they certainly an environmental ethic, mm-hmm, is going to be very foundational in many of these people having kind of, I'm sure when you're out on a hike or something that they find litter, mm-hmm, or they hear hunters or something, there's like kind of like a a broad picture of what it means to be in nature, and often how we don't care for nature, and to like maybe the degree that, you know, if you're growing up in it on this kind of like innate level, you almost see it as your home, as opposed to out there,
right? Mm-hmm. You don't care,
Because I think it's very easy to think of, you know, oh, that's out there, that's over there, that's, you know, somebody else's problem, or oh, that's a shame, and it's just kind of not kind of present for us in the same way that it might be for these kids growing up in this, you know, and especially returning to spots year in and year out, you know, the changes that they'll see and kind of, yeah, that's so, I don't know. I am, like I said earlier, just so envious of my kids and how they have had this experience. And yeah. Is there a bigger vision for this kind of, I don't know if you go to educational conferences or if you're in touch with other educators for maybe not even like full forest school, but for incorporating more nature time in, you know, education. Like you said, the kindergarten was going to the KVR. I don't know if they still, if that program has continued, or if there are other kind of schools that are reaching out to you with questions of like, hey, what would it mean if we were trying to get our kids outdoors more?
We do go to conferences. we are connected with the Wisconsin Resource Center for Charter Schools, and so being, you know, grant eligible for our, I mean, Janelle had mentioned that first grant that we received, but we have received a second grant, and so there's some, you know, stipulations, and so we do conferencing with them. We have been contacted quite a bit in the past for people wanting to start their own sort of public and private forest schools. And then I think when Janelle gives them, you know, a 30-minute phone conversation, they're like, whoa, it takes a lot to start forest school. Okay, I'll get back to you or something, you know? And so I think there is want. I just think the person power has to be there. And going back to how we got started, I think it was just the right five women in the right time at the right place, and it just worked out so well. And so here we are through a lot of really hard work and, you know, a very supportive governance council and a very supportive works and
school district.
Thank you so much to the Lafarge School District for being so, so, so supportive. Absolutely.
I think that, you know, nature schools are proliferating for sure. Like I read some statistic that there's, you know, 250 nature preschools in the United States now or something. So certainly I think the movement is growing. I think we know that it's important. We're seeing the results that kids have better physical, emotional, mental health when they're spending more time outdoors. I know that, you know, the taking the forest school model and putting it into a public school model is a huge endeavor, but that and that's something that, you know, we've been very planful about, but that doesn't stop other schools from, you know, spending a day outside, taking more field trips, having fun Fridays. And I know that schools are starting to do that, incorporate, some schools are incorporating more outside time because they also see the benefits. And I think that, you know, as a team, if we have any goals, you know, it would be to help sort of scale this kind of education so that children everywhere are getting more time outdoors. And so even if somebody can't create a forest school where kids go to school outside every day for parts of every day, that doesn't mean that there aren't a lot of really great ways to get kids connected to nature.
Yeah, yeah. So, because you had mentioned, like, you know, in the case of mosquitoes or something, but like bringing nature in to the classroom, and then you're able to, you know, observe it in a more controlled environment, but you're still really engaging with it and really seeing at a higher level or a deeper level.
Right.
Yeah, that's really great. And there's lots of opportunities because, yeah, I don't see it working as well in the middle of a large city in Chicago or New York or something like that. But doesn't mean those kids still wouldn't benefit from more engagement with nature.
Absolutely. And it's amazing. I mean, we, you know, our children are so fortunate to live in the Driftless area where we have so much access to wild space.
Yes.
But they can be very happy in a tiny little gully in the corner of the village park when the rain is making the water run, and they are happy spending hours mm-hmm. there as well. So, I mean, children...
It doesn't take 1,800 acres.
It doesn't.
Yeah, we didn't even really talk very, very much about that. Being able to fall into imaginative play, we found that it's really a wonderful quality of our forest schools. It could be in a open gym, or it could be in a open park, and they can just help themselves to playing mm-hmm. with whatever mm-hmm. is around them. And so that's a really great attribute, too, that we haven't really talked about much mm-hmm. in forest school.
Yeah. Are there opportunities for people listening that want to know more about the Forest School, help support the Forest School, you know, ways to volunteer or get involved? Like, it's, you know, this is such a great model of schooling, a great opportunity for our community and for so many students, and I'm sure many people want to lift you up and help support that.
Yeah, absolutely. We have lots of opportunities for involvement. I mean, I would say a good place to start is even our website or social media accounts. We have a governance board, which is open to community members to join as seats open if people have interest in forest schooling or background in education. You don't have to have those things, but you know, you have to have some interest in some of the things that we're doing. But also we have committees. We have a finance committee. We have a programs and services committee. We have a PR and marketing committee, and we have a development committee. And so those are places where it kind of takes a little bit less commitment. Anybody can join if you have something that you want to bring to support the Forest School. Those committees are a great place to start as well. You can find out more about that on our website. My role is the development director, and so I'm kind of the person in charge of helping folks connect to the Forest School. So my contact information is on the website, and people would be welcome to reach out to me. I'm always happy to have a phone call, schedule a quick tour. And then we have events throughout the year that we're always looking for volunteers to help us with. In the fall, we do a square dance and soup supper, which is a fundraiser for our school and super fun. And we always need soup servers. We always need extra helpers, cleanup, yeah, all the things. In February, we do our Heart of Winter pancake breakfast, a large community event, lots of volunteer opportunities there as well. And then in the summer, we do a Music in the Park event in the Lafarge Village Park, where we have some food and bring in a band. And that's also another great place to connect with forest schooling families. You wanted to talk a little bit about Garden Fridays.
Oh, sure. Yes. And what about enrollment? How's enrollment doing?
Oh, yeah. Enrollment. So as a charter school, we open enrollment every February. That's when we encourage you to apply so that if our enrollment does fill up, you are assured at least a place in the lottery. So if we have more students apply than we have spaces for, at the end of February, we have to go to lottery. Mm-hmm. And so if you apply after February, you're just automatically put on a waiting list. You've missed that opportunity to get in on the lottery. So we have some classes that are currently full, but we have some classes that do have some room in them. And so if you know someone that might be interested in forest school, or you have a child that is, reach out to me again, and I can tell you where we have space or what the waiting list might look like. We often do have some movement over the summer. Families move, people come and go. And so oftentimes we have people popping in off our wait lists over the summer as well.
And nice. Also going to the KickapooValleyForestSchool.org website,
yep,
and then pressing enrollment,
yep,
will prompt you to the application, and you'll get queued in if a new application comes
yep,
in
too, absolutely,
right? And then Janelle can be in touch with you then. Yeah. But yeah, so Garden Fridays are Miss April is our garden coordinator for the Forest School. It's a joint you know, elementary, middle school, high school, Lafarge School, and Forest School joint garden. It's about an acre, yeah, and it's in Village Park, in Lafarge Village Park. And on Fridays from 8 to 10 or 8:30 to 10:30, throughout the whole summer, we'll have garden work time and play time, so the children can come and play and adults can weed and tend and harvest all of the food that's growing in the garden.
Right. And you don't have to be a forest school family to come. If you're forest school curious or you just want to be forest school adjacent for a while, you can come hang out in the garden on Fridays. One of us in the leadership role will always be there. And then April, our garden coordinator, will be there as well. It's a great chance to ask questions about forest schooling and connect with other families and just let the kids run around in a beautiful outdoor space. Mm.
Yeah, and a great opportunity for the kids to kind of get their hands dirty in a, you know, a way that then gets them snacks and and whatever later in the year.
Absolutely.
That's really nice. And if anybody is curious to share this with any friends or family that are curious about forest school, the podcast will be archived on the WDRT website and is also available on Spotify. So pretty easy to get your hands on and to share it around as people might want to get this information out to more people, because it is such a beautiful model of schooling, and I'm just couldn't be more grateful that it came into being right when my oldest was ready to go off to kindergarten, and it felt like such a wonderful place to send him, knowing that he was gonna have the level of engagement with the natural world that I would love to give him if, you know, work and all the other parts of life didn't get in the way. And I remember how many mosquito bites he came home with on that first day.
It was
it definitely, you know, but I think he got so many mosquito bites because he didn't care. He was climbing trees, he was meeting other kids, he was hauling around logs, he was just fully engaged in the environment and like didn't notice that it was also happened to be a cloud of mosquitoes. So glad you got those head nets since then. Mm-hmm. And and it has just been a beautiful thing to watch. And then to go out with my kids in nature and see them just so aware of the environment and know that we are, because it is not just me now, raising somebody who is really compassionate and caring for the natural world and is, you know, gonna see their role in taking responsibility for it. And that's pretty special. And thank you so much for joining me today and talking about this and sharing a little bit more about the Forest School, and hopefully catching some ears of folks that also wanna join. And thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us, Julie.
Thank you so much, Julie. This was a pleasure.
Okay, and let's turn to the Driftless Folk School calendar of events coming up. This Saturday at the Lafarge Community Center, we have one of our spring barn dance coming up, and that is 5 o'clock for a potluck, 6:30 for dancing, wrapping up around 9 o'clock. Come and dance with us, y'all. It's going to be a really fun time, and that is this Saturday in Lafarge. And then going over into May, we've got Off-Grid Solar Batteries with John Passy coming up on May 9th. We got Spring Foraging that same day with Nicholas Wazi-Gale. There's going to be so much growing in the woods. Come forage for things like ramps and nettles, and there'll be mushrooms out there and who knows what else. And then Nicholas will also be teaching in mid-May here on the 16th and the 17th a 2-day spoon carving class. So that is like block of wood to beautiful spoon. John Anderson is going to be teaching the 5-day timber framing class. So that's a pretty big deal class. And that is a Sunday through, I believe, Friday or a Thursday. No, a Wednesday through a Sunday. Here we are. And that is the timber framing class with John Anderson. And then there's going to be long stitch book binding, a medieval paperback book with Annika Baird. That is going to be on May 22nd, so a month from now. And then also Coptic book binding. So one of those is in the morning and the other is in the afternoon. You could make a day of it and learn how to make a couple different books. There's Herbal Floral Remedies with Kale Karabowski on May 23rd. Martha's got a Hammered Copper Bowl class also on May 23rd. And then on Sunday, May 24th, with Dr. Crystal Jewell, there's going to be wild crafting with beeswax, and there's going to be making mullein torches and acorn cap balms. So that sounds super cool and super fun. And lastly, here towards the end of May, we have Intarsia Knitting with Grace Mitchell, and that's like a cool special kind of knitting where you basically are double knitting, or often called picture knitting. And so that's a super cool thing for those of you who are knitters. And then we get on into June with the mushroom foraging and introduction to oxen and shibori dyeing with indigo. So lots of fun things coming up on the Driftless Folk School. Thanks so much for tuning in. Have a beautiful evening, folks.